consensus of what the world tells us. And we're going to talk about asking counsel of God. If you look in Joshua chapter 9, we have the story of the Gibeonites. So we're at the beginning of the account of the conquest of Canaan. So Joshua has led the Israelites into Canaan. They've already dealt with Jericho. So they've marched around the city, and the walls came tumbling down. Then we had Achan take something that he wasn't supposed to take from the city. They went up to attack Ai. They, in fact, said, we only need like 1,000 people to go take Ai. They went up, got defeated, came back, and realized that they had an issue that they had to deal with. Once they had dealt with Achan and his family, then they had gone up, and they attacked Ai, ambushed the city, basically trapped the army between two Israelite armies, and they've taken Ai. So, just on the heels of that, we have this story. So, chapter 9, verse 1. And it came to pass, when all the kings who were on this side of the Jordan, in the hills and in the lowland and in the coast of the great sea toward Lebanon, the Hittite, the Amorite, the Canaanite, the Perizzite, the Hivite, and the Jebusite heard about it, and they gathered to fight with Joshua and Israel with one accord. Okay, so all the kings have heard about what has happened, and we find out, even going back to Rahab, they heard what happened in Egypt. And you got Sihon and Og on the other side of the Jordan. All of the word has been getting to the people in Canaan about the Israelites. Now they've defeated Jericho, they've defeated Ai, and the people have heard about it. So all the armies are starting to get ready, starting to prepare, and starting to line up to fight with the Israelites. But, verse 3, when the inhabitants of Gibeon heard what Joshua had done to Jericho and Ai, they worked craftily, and went and pretended to be ambassadors, and they took old sacks on their donkeys, old wineskins torn and mended, old and patched sandals on their feet, and old garments on themselves, and all the bread of their provision was dry and moldy. And they went to Joshua to the camp of Gilgal, and said to him and the men of Israel, we have come from a far country, now therefore make a covenant with us. Then the men of Israel said to the Hivites, perhaps you dwell among us, so how can we make a covenant with you? Good thinking, Israelites. So they've shown up and said, hey, make a covenant with us. And the Israelites said, whoa, maybe you live from around here. We can't make a covenant with you. Verse 8, but they said to Joshua, we are your servants. And Joshua said to them, who are you and where do you come from? So they said to him, from a very far country your servants have come, because of the name of the Lord your God, for we have heard of his fame and all that he did in Egypt, and all that he did to the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon, king of Heshbon, and Og, king of Bashan, who was at Ashtaroth. Therefore our elders and all the inhabitants of our country spoke to us, saying, take provisions with you for the journey, and go to meet them, and say to them, we are your servants. Now therefore make a covenant with us. This bread of ours we took hot for our provisions from our houses on the day we departed to come to you. But now look, it is dry and moldy. And see, these wineskins which we filled were new, and see they are torn. And these our garments and our sandals have become old because of the very long journey. Verse 14, then the men of Israel took some of the provisions, but they did not ask counsel of the Lord. Verse 15, so Joshua made peace with them and made a covenant with them to let them live, and the rulers of the congregation swore to them. So the Gibeonites had shown up. They said, we want to make a pact with you. We want to make a covenant with you. And the Israelites said, we're really not supposed to. But the Gideonites said, all right, well, look at this. Well, this bread was fresh when we left, and now it's all dry and moldy. These wineskins were new, and now they're old. And look at our clothes and our sandals. And so the men of Israel gathered together, and they talked it over, and they didn't ask God. And they said, all right, well, this makes sense. It all adds up. So they went ahead and made that covenant. Verse 16, and it happened at the end of 3 days after they had made a covenant with them that they heard they were their neighbors who dwelt near them. It was about 5 miles from where they were. They had not gone very far at all. It was pretty much the next place they were coming to. Verse 17, then the children of Israel journeyed and came to their cities on the third day. Their cities were Gibeon, Cherethah, Beeroth, and Kirjath-Jearim. But the children of Israel did not attack them, because the rulers of the congregation had sworn to them by the Lord God of Israel. And all the congregation complained against the rulers, with just cause, I might add. Verse 19, then all the rulers said to the congregation, we have sworn to them by the Lord God of Israel, now therefore we may not touch them. This we will do to them, we will let them live, lest wrath be upon them because of the oath which we swore to them. And the rulers said to them, let them live, but let them be woodcutters and water carriers for all the congregation, as the rulers had promised them. Then Joshua called for them, and he spoke to them, saying, why have you deceived us, saying, we are very far from you, when you dwell near us? Now, therefore, you are cursed, and none of you shall be freed from being slaves, woodcutters and water carriers for the house of my God. So they answered Joshua and said, because your servants were clearly told that the Lord your God commanded his servant Moses to give you all the land and destroy all the inhabitants of the land from before you, therefore we were very much afraid for our lives because of you. We have done this thing. That's exactly what they were told. They were told right. But Israel failed to do it here. Verse 25, and now here we are in your hands, do with us as it seems good and right to do to us. So he did to them and delivered them out of the hand of the children of Israel, so they did not kill them. And that day Joshua made them woodcutters and water carriers for the congregation and for the altar of the Lord in the place where he was used even to this day. So the Israelites run into these Gibeonites. Now, first of all, anyone coming to them and asking to make an alliance or a treaty should have been a no offhand for the Israelites. They were right in that, because what God had told them was to drive out the inhabitants. That's what God had told them. And frankly, there was no need to make peace or an alliance with any other nation. They didn't need any help. They had God. So there was no need for them to make any alliance with anyone under any circumstance. Setting even that aside, okay, God had led them into every battle. Everything that they had done so far in Israel had been at God's hand. So going to Jericho and fighting against Jericho, how did they know how to take Jericho? Well, God told them exactly what to do. He told them exactly what to do. When they sinned, when Achan sinned at Jericho, took things he shouldn't have from the city, and they went up against Ai, God stopped them from winning against Ai. And once they dealt with it, then they were able to defeat it. So now they run into another situation, and they say, oh, we don't need God on this one. We're all set. So they thought they had all of the information that they needed, right? They had the wineskins, they had the moldy bread, they had the torn garments and the worn-out shoes, and they said, all right, we can make this decision on our own. And that's the critical error here in this story, is that they did not take counsel of God. Verse 14. That's the critical error. Because God would have seen through this lie if they had only asked him. But they never bothered. They never bothered to ask counsel of God. They thought they had all the information they needed from what they could see, from what they had heard, and they didn't need to go any further with it. We cannot be that way. We can't think that we know all the facts until we've consulted God. No matter what we see or we hear in the world, we can't think that we know all the facts until we've consulted God. We can't trust what the world says or shows. The world lies. The Gibeonites lied. What they said was untrue. They had evidence, but it was still untrue. It was a lie. We can't trust what we see or hear from the world. The only thing that we can take at face value is God's word. We don't have enough information until we've sought counsel from God. Now what I wanted us to do this morning is to look at two big things, two big areas of our life that sit out to me as places where we especially need to make sure that we take counsel from God, and that's as a parent and as a Christian. So first, let's talk about as a parent. And let's talk about as a parent in discipline. So I can find any number of books, any number of well-researched experts that will tell you that saying no to your child is harmful, is damaging to them. I can find any number of articles, any number of research that would reflect that. I can find any number of things that would tell me that spanking is child abuse. I could find that very easily. That's what the world tells us. That's what the world says to us. That's what the experts say. And they can make their point very convincingly. They've got research to back it up. So if I take the world's advice, if I take counsel from the world, then I would think that disciplining my child is wrong. That's not something that I should do. But if I take counsel from God, I see that discipline is essential. Turn in your Bible to Proverbs. We'll look at a few. Start with Proverbs chapter 13. Proverbs 13, verse 24. He who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him promptly. So God tells me to show love for my child is to discipline, is to bring them discipline. Go to chapter 22. Proverbs 22, verse 15. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction will drive it far from him. There's something within the nature of children that discipline is needed. They need that. Turn to chapter 23, verses 13 and 14. My favorite here. Okay, do not withhold correction from a child. For if you beat him with a rod, he will not die. You shall beat him with a rod and deliver his soul from hell. There is destruction that comes from an undisciplined child. And you have to use discipline to help get that child where he needs to go, to deliver him from that fate. And finally, in Proverbs chapter 29, verse 15. The rod and rebuke give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. An undisciplined child brings shame to his parents. That's the reality of it. Now, there are many different forms of correction. There are many different forms of discipline. But if I just take the world's advice, then I might think that I don't have to do it. But that is unimportant. But God tells me that it is. God tells me that it's essential. That there are things that will happen to my child if I don't bring discipline into his life in one form or another. We can also look at taking counsel in the media that we allow to influence our children. Kate loves listening to the Kids Bop Pandora channel. And I even enjoy it myself sometimes, I'll admit. And it's better than a lot of other things because usually the lyrics have been cleaned up to some degree. It's some versions I even like better than the original. But I'm foolish if I think that everything that comes on that channel is appropriate for my son to hear. I'm foolish if I think that I can turn that on and just let him listen to it and everything will be okay. I'm foolish if I think that that will happen. The world says that G-rated movies are okay. Anybody can see them. They're fine. But if you look at what's in the G-rated movies, you might find things that you don't want your children to see. Language, music, and on TV, and in movies, even though the world says that these things are acceptable, even though the world says that these things are safe, innuendo in G-rated movies, yes. Innuendo, things that children shouldn't see, don't need to see. Besides the fact that we've got behaviors and we've got thinking that's not godly that comes through in some of these movies and some of this music, the modeling of ungodly behavior. I have to be the media gatekeeper for my child. I have to make sure that whatever media is influencing him is something that I'm okay with, or at least that I've dealt with, that I know what it is that he's experiencing. If I take counsel from God, I find that God doesn't have a rating system. God doesn't say G is okay. God doesn't say these channels are okay and these channels aren't okay. Ratings aren't what's important to God. In Philippians chapter 4, God doesn't talk about ratings. He talks about the thoughts. He talks about what we dwell on. Philippians chapter 4, verses 8 and 9. Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there is any virtue, or if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. If I fill my child's mind with untrue, innoble things, things that aren't lovely, things that are impure, then that's what he's going to meditate on. But if I surround him with these positive things, then that's what he'll meditate on. That's what he'll think about. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, sorry, 2 Corinthians chapter 10. Second Corinthians chapter 10, verses 4 and 5. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty in God for pulling down strongholds, casting down arguments, and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. That's the responsibility for thinking. It's not about the ratings. It's bringing thoughts into captivity. It's meditating on those things that will lead us closer to God instead of those things that will lead us further away. Whatever the rating is that shows up, whatever the music channel is, whether it's Disney or whoever, that's what's important. I am responsible for making sure that the influences on my child are influences for good that will lead him closer to Christ. And also, we deal with children thinking about asking counsel as a parent in what they learn, in what they know. And the world says, look, you can turn your children over to us to educate, whether that's public school or private school. We are professional teachers. We are the experts, and we know what your child needs to learn. And truthfully, we kind of prefer if you'd stay out of it. Help out from time to time, but for the most part, if you could just kind of stay out of it and let us handle it, because we're the experts. We know what they need to learn. And you as a parent, really, you're not responsible for any kind of teaching, because we're just taking care of all of that. So you're not responsible for what they learn or how they learn. We're going to take charge of that. Try not to contradict us. And truthfully, you as an individual, you as the parent of that child, are not qualified to say what that child needs to know. But if we take counsel from God, we see that that's not at all the case. That's not how God looks at it. Now, we can add to this as well. Turn your child over to us for Bible class. Bring your child on Sunday and on Wednesday night to Bible class. And from those classes, they'll learn everything they need to learn about God. I, as a teacher of children, do my best, and I think hard about the lessons that I teach and what I want them to learn. But if you're relying on me solely, you're going to be disappointed. They're not going to get it all. I can't do it. I don't have enough time. I can't model for them day in and day out the behaviors that they need to see just for the short period of time that I have them. I don't know everything that's going on in their lives to take the word to them and show them. This is what God says about what you're going through. This is what God says about what you're doing. You as a parent have to be involved. You cannot hand religious instruction over to someone else holding. We have to take responsibility for what our children learn. And that's what God tells us. Look in Ephesians chapter 6. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4. And you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. That's my responsibility as a father, to make sure that my children are brought up in the training and the admonition of the Lord. That's my responsibility. That's my job. Going all the way back to Deuteronomy. The book of Deuteronomy, chapter 6. Deuteronomy 6, starting in verse 4. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. God says, not make sure that they go someplace and get this education, but you are responsible to make sure that your children know what God says. You are responsible to make sure that your child learns what I expect, what my statutes and what my laws are. That's what God tells them. And then finally in Proverbs chapter 22, Proverbs 22, verse 6. Probably see this one coming. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. My responsibility is to train my child. Now, please bring your children to Bible class. Please make sure that they're educated, whether you do that yourself or whether that is in the school system. It's not a condemnation of those things. It's a condemnation of the thought that I can just let those things be and I'm done. I'm responsible to make sure that the teaching goes on in my home and from me, that I'm modeling the behaviors and that I know what they're learning. It's really easy to find out what your kids learned in Bible class, by the way. You can ask them. When we get out of here, it's really, really easy. You can ask your kids what they learned at school the same way. You can be involved and you can know what your children are learning. Because I guarantee you, if you send your children to any school, they will learn something that's incorrect. And by knowing what your children are learning, you can correct it. Whether it's morally incorrect or factually incorrect, you can deal with it. But only if you know what they're learning. Only if you have that discussion. Only if you take the responsibility to say, I will make sure that my child is learning, that I know what my child is learning, and that they're learning the right things. Now, as a Christian, the first thing that I thought of was drinking responsibly. I'm not going to read you Daryl's lesson. Okay? But I had to bring it up. Because the world tells you that you can voluntarily surrender your judgment without consequence. That you can voluntarily say, you know what, I'm gonna damage my judgment here in this situation, and nothing bad will happen for it. Nothing bad will happen. And for that matter, even adding to it, we can really dabble in any kind of sin that we want to, as long as it's in moderation. That's what the world says. That's not what God tells us. If we take counsel from God, we see it's unwise to drink. Excuse me. Proverbs 20, if you still got Proverbs open. Proverbs chapter 20, verse 1. Wine is a mocker, strong drink is a brawler, and whoever is led astray by it is not wise. We're unwise to get involved in those things. We're unwise to think, look, we can just do this a little bit and we'll be okay. There won't be consequences to it. If you need more information on that, listen to Daryl's lesson again. Okay, because he pointed it out very clearly. In Ephesians chapter 5, and in verse 18, Ephesians 5, verse 18, God tells us, do not be drunk with wine in which is dissipation, but be filled with the Spirit. I can't do that if I'm getting involved in this. If I'm drinking, if I'm surrendering my judgment, if I'm impairing myself, I can't be filled with the Spirit. And finally, in 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 22, the world says, lust, fulfilling sins in moderation, it's okay. Okay, you don't have to live like a monk. You can do some of these things. It's all right. But in 2 Timothy 2, verse 22, Paul tells Timothy, flee also youthful lust, but pursue righteousness, faith, love, peace with those who call on the Lord out of a pure heart. Get away from those lusts. Get away from those sins. Don't draw them closer in moderation. That's not what God calls us to do. We need to seek counsel from God in what we believe. Okay? We can't just think the way that everybody else does. That's what the world tells us to do. Look, we're all here. You should be here too. This is the way we all think about this. So you should think this way about it too. We look at any social issue in the world, the majority, or in a lot of cases, the vocal minority, drives what the majority believes. Look, this is okay. It's okay to abort. It's okay to live an alternative lifestyle. It's okay to do it this way or to do it that way. And because we all think it, then it is okay. And that's what anyone else should think. I had to put this on here for myself. Science has proven, so it must be true. Scientists have shown that this is the truth until they say that it's not the truth. Eggs are bad. Actually, they're really good. They're bad, but only these parts. And the rest of them is good. Okay? I get a kick out of the dinosaur books that we look at, and I like the really factual ones that actually tell you how much they've discovered. And they say, okay, well, this is this dinosaur, and it looked like this, and this is what it did, and this is how it had its young, and these were all its behaviors. And we know because we found a foot. So, there you go. Mega penguin. Bigger than any human. They got a foot and part of a wing. That's a penguin for sure. And it was huge, and it was heavy, and it did all these things. Well, come on. But that's what the world will tell you. Now, when they realize that that's wrong, there'll be no apology or no correction. No one will be discredited. They just say, oh, we don't believe that anymore. Stop talking about it. Set that aside. No, we're on this now. Say, yeah, no, dinosaurs have feathers. No, forget about the scale. They have feathers. Whatever that is. But that's what the world will tell us. They know. They've proven it. They can see it. They figured it out. And so you have to believe it too, whatever that means. We looked at, as far as religious beliefs, we did our church history study. So many people led away by so many things in ignorance, or because they didn't look further. We're doing our Calvinism study in the men's class. Daryl had played for us a sermon where a guy was basically explaining all of the tenets of Calvinism, one by one. And he was going from the Bible, so he was reading verses, but he always stopped a verse short. And if you just read one more verse, you would see that what he's saying doesn't make sense. But there's so many people that are led astray because they say, I'll take that. It makes sense. So I can take that and I can use that. And I don't have to look and find out for myself if what you're saying is true. I don't have to research. I don't have to look that up for myself. If we take counsel from God, we see that we have to test what we believe. We can't just accept it because this person has said it, or because they can show us this evidence. We don't test what they believe. We have to test what we believe. We have to make sure that it's supported by what God said, no matter how convincing or logical it may seem. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 21, Short verse. Paul says, test all things. Hold fast what is good. You check it all. We have the example of the Bereans. They heard the word from those that came from after they had left from Thessalonica. They heard the word. And what they did immediately was they checked. And they said, is this true? You said that this is what God said. Is that what God said? And that's what we have to do. We've got to test it. We've got to look. We've got to say, does this match up? Does this match up with what God said? What you said? Does that make sense with what God said? And I hold fast to what is good. All the other things can go. But this is right. Okay, I can hold fast to that. In 1 John. 1 John chapter 4 and verse 1. First John 4, verse 1. Beloved, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits, whether they are of God, because many false prophets have gone out into the world. And the world will lie. People will lie. And people will innocently lead astray. People will, with bad intent, lead people astray. It's all the same. If you get led astray, you're led astray. We have to test it. Before I say, yes, I believe this, I have to make sure that it's what God says. I have to make sure that it makes sense. I have to take that counsel from God. And we have to look at how we live. And how we live in this world. We are the salt and the light. Jesus tells us we are salt and light in the world. We are the preserving element. We are something that stands up and should stand out. And we should look at ourselves if we're not standing out. That should be a warning to us. The world will tell us that there are some situations where lying is okay. Alright, it's not all the time. There's bad lies. But it's okay to tell an untruth or to hide the truth in certain situations. Totally okay. Alright, maybe you need to close that sale. It's alright if I kind of hide the truth on this to make sure that happens. I'm not really lying. You know, I'm not just bald-faced lying. I'm just, hey, they don't need to know this. Just hide that from them. Or, you know, I don't want to hurt this person's feelings. It's a lot easier for me to just say something that's not true. Alright, but if we take counsel from God, God doesn't put up with lying. Look in 1 Timothy chapter 1. First Timothy 1, verses 9 and 10. Knowing this, that the law is not made for a righteous person, but for the lawless and insubordinate, for the ungodly and for sinners, for the unholy and profane, for murderers of fathers and murderers of mothers, for manslayers, for fornicators, for sodomites, for kidnappers, for liars, for perjurers, if there is any other thing that is contrary to sound doctrine. This is not the only time that God groups lying in with all of these other terrible things. In Revelation chapter 21, verse 8, it's the same kind of thing. Verse 7, he says, he who overcomes shall inherit all things, and I will be his God, and he shall be my son. But the cowardly, unbelieving, abominable, murderers, sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars shall have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. God says no lying is okay. No lying is okay. If we make a habit of lies, then we will receive the same punishments as if we had been murderers, as if we had been sexually immoral, whatever those sins that we committed. God doesn't permit lying under any circumstances. The world will also say that unjust laws, there are some laws that just don't make sense. You don't have to follow those. And if there are people that are making those laws and they're unjust, then you don't have to do what they say. So we don't like what's happening. We're permitted now to break certain laws. Okay? And there are some laws that are just okay to break. Feeding. Okay? That's a law. It says this is what you are to do. And if you break this law, then there are penalties. And it's not about how bad the penalty is. It's about this is a law. There are some situations where stealing is okay. You know, if we think that a person is properly motivated, from the world standpoint, then yeah, it's all right that they stole. It's all right that they took something that didn't belong to them. All right, but that's not how God sees it. Okay, if we seek God's counsel, God expects us to be obedient to all laws. In Romans chapter 13. Romans 13, verses 1 and 2. God's counsel says, let every soul be subject to the governing authorities. For there is no authority except from God, and the authorities that exist are appointed by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God, and those who resist will bring judgment on themselves. God says, look, this authority was put in place by me, and you have to be obedient. Obviously, we understand that serving God rises above serving man. We also obey God rather than man. But if the law of the man does not violate the law of God, then we have to keep it. That's what God expects us to do. No matter what the world may tell us. Okay, it's all right if we do it here or if we do it there. It's all right in this situation. That's not what God says. God says to keep the law. God says to be subject. God tells us that we need to submit to that authority, not to resist it. And the world will tell us that being a good person is what matters. Be good. Do good things. Okay? It's crazy legalism to think that you're going to read this old book and have to do everything that's in it. That's crazy. Right? Try and, you know, kind of do your best. God is all love, forgiveness, mercy. Go to church, show up, and you're all right. That's all you need to do. That's what the world tells us. But if we seek God's counsel, we see that God expects and commands obedience. In 1 Samuel chapter 15, after King Saul returned from his failed attempt to destroy the Amalekites, and Samuel goes up to him after talking to him about it, and Samuel says in 1 Samuel 15, verse 22, so Samuel said, has the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to heed than the fat of rams. God says, you do all these sacrifices, but I want you to obey me. I want you to do what I tell you to do. That's my expectation. He also said that he's going to judge the world. He is love, he is forgiveness, and he is mercy. But that's tempered by the fact that he is justice and he is righteousness. In Hebrews chapter 10, Hebrews 10, starting in verse 26. For if we sin willfully after we have received the knowledge of the truth, there no longer remains a sacrifice for sins, but a certain fearful expectation of judgment and fiery indignation which will devour the adversaries. Anyone who has rejected Moses' law dies without mercy on the testimony of two or three witnesses. Of how much worse punishment do you suppose will he be thought worthy who has trampled the Son of God underfoot, counted the blood of the covenant by which he was sanctified a common thing, and insulted the Spirit of grace? For we know him who said, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord, and again the Lord will judge his people. Verse 31, it is a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. Yes, he is loving. Yes, he is merciful. Yes, he is full of grace, but he is also just and righteous and will judge the world, and he will judge those by what they've done. And it's not enough to say, all right, well, I do most things all right. I do the laws that I want to all right. God expects us to be obedient to him, to turn ourselves over to him. He expects us to do what's right because it's right, not because it happens to coincide with what we want to do, but because it's what's right. One more verse for you. Proverbs chapter 14. Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 15. The simple believes every word, but the prudent considers well his steps. Don't be simple. Don't be simple in the world. Don't trust what the world tells you. Don't take it at face value. Don't be like Joshua and the Israelites and be led astray by what the world says is true. Seek God's counsel. Take his word at face value and test everything else. That's the way that we've got to live our lives. The lesson is yours.